God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in times of trouble. Peace through conflict. That seems to be the heart of what the psalmist would say to us. I'd love to say that we can stop wars, that there'll never be any more trouble. But what we're reading here in the psalm is it is possible to know peace even through trouble. And that can change everything. And that can actually make you an instrument for bringing peace in troubled times. And the psalmist has something. It's amazing to think this psalm was written over 3,000 years ago. And yet it seems that some things just never change. Human nature doesn't change. The world, in one sense, doesn't change. There was suffering then. There's suffering now. There was peace then. There can be peace now. Often when you talk to solicitors or barristers and they come out from winning a court case and they're very pleased, and if you ask them about how it was that they brought it about, they'll say, a case is won in chambers. It's the preparation you do beforehand. The athletes will tell you the same thing. It's the mental preparation, the state of mind and heart, the attitude they go into something with makes such a huge difference. We came out of the First World War victorious. And in one sense, it's a testimony to the condition of the people at that sort of time. We're looking at this psalm because this psalm helps to condition our hearts to be in the right frame of mind, the right frame of heart, to go through troubled times and have peace and be those who bring peace, even if that is the peace of victory, as was the case for those people we're thinking of today. So there are these two themes in the 42nd Psalm. The first theme is the theme of trouble. Trouble. Everybody knows trouble. And the second is the theme of peace, which not everybody knows. Not everybody knows peace. So God is speaking to us through the psalm, and we should hear the things that he is saying to us as he speaks to us through his word. And I've highlighted three things. God acknowledges there is suffering. He sees it, he knows it, he understands it. He doesn't stand afar off. He's not ignorant of what it is to be a human being and the things we pass through. But the second thing is this. In the midst of all that, despite all that, because some people are struck dumb by the horror of it all, God has something to say. He has a proclamation to make, and it's a proclamation of hope. He has hope for us if we'll listen. And the third thing is this. He doesn't just tell us that there is a hope. He offers that salvation to us. He invites us to experience it for ourselves. So these three things I want to highlight from the psalm very, very briefly. Suffering is not new. And as the psalmist writes, he seems to compartmentalize suffering into two parts. There's natural disasters. And we've all been shaken and troubled by the many things that we hear about taking place in the world. Famines and earthquakes and tsunamis and volcanic eruptions. Things that just trouble our world. Natural disasters. But there's another thing that troubles our world. It's also produced through nature. Our nature. Human nature. We're part of it all. And the thing that the psalmist refers to as he goes through his psalm, and he picks it up in verse 6, nations raging, is that we've got this propensity to pride, haven't we? And nations come and nations fall. And sadly, the way these things are worked out, verse 9, is by war. People make war on each other. People hate each other and they make war on one another. And this psalm recognizes these two different kinds of trouble. There's the nations raging against each other and the war that proceeds from human nature. And then there's all the troubles that take place naturally in the world. And these two things echo each other. The mountains being moved and thrown into the sea. You can almost picture a landslide, can't you? And, you know, the kind of a whole mountainside just sliding down into the sea. A troubled world. And the whole of creation seems disturbed and troubled. Verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. There's trouble, and God sees this trouble. And verse 2, as we go on through the psalm, I will not fear. There are things to strike fear into human hearts. Real fear. Terrible things. Terrifying things. things. And this psalm recognizes that the disruptions that can be experienced, of course, strike fear into our hearts. As we go through the waters foaming and roaring, mountains trembling, terrible storms, great disruptions. And in one sense, what we read about in nature here is referring not just to the actual events, but they stand as almost like a symbol for the experiences we have in life. Sometimes you've had an experience where your world has just been turned upside down. Maybe you've lost somebody, or maybe your financial security has gone. All sorts of things deeply shock and disturb us. They're like a storm hits our life. And then as the psalm goes on, it's as if he's reaching the crescendo in verse 6, the nations raging and these wars that break out that goes on to verse 9. It's as if somehow this is the worst of it. As if in this troubled world where there are so many difficulties, why is it in all of this trouble we don't stand together? Isn't that the sharpest and the worst of the pain? That in a world where we need to stand shoulder to shoulder with each other and help our neighbour and love our neighbour, it seems we turn on our neighbours and go to war with our neighbours. It's as if, morally speaking, this is the worst of all the calamities that human beings face. The way we fall out with each other, the way we misunderstand each other, the way we turn on each other, the way we come to hate each other and wage war against one another. The world war, First World War, we've all been inundated, haven't we, with just the litany of misery that we have visited on each other and upon ourselves, the great weight of human suffering. This little parish, this little quiet, ordinary parish, 24 young men, mostly young men, lost from this parish, and their records are all around us. Some of them we know a lot about, some of them we know little about. Some of them lived shorter lives, some of them longer lives, some married, some had children they never saw. Such misery visited even on this little place. And they were responding to something honourable, you know. That despite all the misery and the horror of it all, little Belgium and little neutral country, we had promised to defend the people of that country. We'd made a treaty with those people and said, as the largest and most powerful nation in the world at that time, should their neutrality be infringed, we will defend them. It was infringed and we defended them. We did something remarkable. Let's not forget that in the midst of it all. But even so, there is so much terrible suffering in the defense of honor in that sense. And victory came. And a wonderful victory it was. And there, as I said, there was singing in the streets. But we've remembered again and again about the wounds that never heal, broken minds, bereavement, broken families, disruption, lost property, terrible changes in the face of the world. And amazingly, as the soldiers came back from all over the world, they carried with them the flu virus, that carried off more people than the war itself in 1919. Terrible, terrible things. And it was the war to end all wars. But within 2 decades, Britain and Germany were at war once again. Another terrible, dreadful, dreadful war. So this passage that we read recognizes, and God recognizes, that there is great suffering in the world. And we've had the opportunity to think about it. And that's acknowledged here. Secondly, though, this psalm makes a bold proclamation. That's not the whole story. There is hope. There is hope against that whole backdrop. There is hope. He proclaims that hope through the psalm here. I'm going to show you a short video in a moment. But the video begins with a statement of fact that I kind of knew, but it hadn't really kind of sat home with me. I think 9 million Commonwealth troops went into conflict. 9 million. Every single one had a helmet. Every single one had their weapon. Every single one had their uniform. And every single one had a Bible. We had 200 of the children from North Bradley School here on Thursday for a commemorative event. And there was an officer from the British Army who was here with us. And she was telling me that it's still true today. Every service personnel is still issued with a Bible. It's part of your kit. It's an essential part of your kit. Why do we send people out into these terrible, the worst of all troubles, armed with a Bible? Why do soldiers need a Bible? Because in a world of trouble, you need hope. You need peace on the inside of you to weather the storms on the outside of you. And this book, this Bible, tells us of this hope. In the first verse, God is our refuge. There is a safe place we can turn to. There is a safe person, in fact, to whom we can turn, who won't wage war against us, but who will have peace with us in the midst of all that conflict. And in the second verse, he speaks of fear. Therefore, we will not fear. What do you call somebody who will not fear? You call that person a hero. You call that person a person of courage. We need courage, don't we? And this psalm tells us it's possible to have courage and security, even in a troubled world. Amazingly, in verse 4, he says, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. It's possible to be happy. Even in a deeply, deeply troubled world, it's possible to be happy, says the psalmist. You can be courageous, you can be bold, you can be happy, you can be safe and secure. Verse 5, as we go on, we read, God is in the midst of her. We shall not be moved. God will help. I love that expression. God with us, near us, not far off and removed, with us in this troubled world, experiencing these troubles with us, helping us. How much do you appreciate a helping hand? How much do you appreciate somebody who draws alongside? How much do you appreciate somebody who shows you the way and helps you? God helps his people. And then as we go on to the verse 7, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Again, this image of warfare is all the way through. And here's this strong tower, this ultimate defense. One in whom we can find this security, because that's what the purpose of a fortress is, isn't it? To defend us. God will defend his people. Great security, great help, great courage, great gladness and refuge can be found by the person who knows God. And this wonderful ninth verse, he makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow, shatters the spear, and burns the chariot with fire. Now, obviously, that last verse there, the bringing wars to cease, is a reference to the actual ends of physical conflicts. Wars do come to an end. Thank God they come to an end. But clearly, there's another kind of peace that's been referred to here, a deeper peace, a personal peace, an inner peace. A peace that is not just changed by whether we're at war or at peace in the world, but an inner peace that is being referred to in this verse. So, what I'm saying is, the psalmist has something to say to us. In a troubled world, we can have hope. You can have hope. If you notice at the beginning, to the choir master of the songs of Korah, according to the Alamoth, a song. He's not just telling us, he's singing about it. He's singing about this great peace that he knows in a very troubled world, and he's getting this peace from God. I'm going to play you a video, and in this video, what's shown here is just some very ordinary people, because we're not living in a time of conflict like they did, but we also know trouble in our measure, and we also need peace, and this video, I think, reflects something on that.
Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more.
And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband.
And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man.
He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God.
He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away."
And he who was seated on the throne said,
"Behold, I'm making all things new."
Also he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true."
And he said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end."
To the thirsty, I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment.
The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son.
So there's hope. It's not just in the psalm, is it? It's all the way through the Bible. A wonderful, wonderful hope in a deeply troubled world. And the good news is this, and it's my final point. It's one thing to know that this hope exists, that it's out there, that some people know it, some people sing about it, some people experience it. It's another thing to have this peace, to be the possessor of it, to be the one who enjoys it and knows all about it. And one thing I love about this psalm is the way it ends, because it doesn't just leave us knowing that this peace exists. It shows us the way to find it. It tells us what we've got to do if we want to know this peace that surpasses all understanding, that will guard our hearts and minds in this world and into the next. We're not left outside the fortress. God will open the drawbridge and welcome us in. It says in verse 10, "Be still and know that I am God." Just be still and know. It's possible to know God. He's inviting us into a personal relationship with himself. Be still and know that I am God. And let me just say something about the word God, because some people think that's his name. It's a title. God means the one who is above everything, the final word, the ultimate power, one greater than all. And we can know him. It's his title. And as we go down into verse 11, we're told he's the Lord there. And it's capital letters, L-O-R-D. We're told that he's God. You can know God, the Lord. And in ancient times, hidden behind those capital letters there was the secret and hidden personal name of Almighty God that people were not even allowed to take upon their lips lest they blaspheme against his holy name. And so they just said, the Lord, to refer to him in that sense. It's like a secret. In the book of Romans, there's a wonderful verse in the book of Romans, chapter 10 and verse 7. "Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved." You'll know this security, you'll know this peace. What is the name that he's given us to call upon? At the name of Jesus, every knee will bow. Every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. You know his name, Be still and know that he is God. Trust in him, and this peace will be yours. I'm going to play you one final short video. It's a poem, in fact, before we sing in conclusion and go out to lay our final poppy.
If I should die, think only this. A bullet flew by that did not miss. What story of the war is told? Romance bright or horror cold? Triumph's tale or tragic loss? The iron or the wooden cross? Lost lament or victor's boast? Full brass band or lone last post? Heroes, villains, cowards, kings, it's war. It's all these things. It's us, unleashed, for good and ill. The gallant heart, the savage will. A Kaiser's pride, a nation's fear, a global greed. It's all in here. What causes war? The old book asks. Beyond the history, beneath the masks, begins a want. Becomes a will, demands its way, prepares to kill. The wars we mark as long ago are close to home. They're all we know. What ceases war? The pressing question. What can halt inborn aggression?
To end all wars and retribution, war itself is no solution. Can terror end all terror now? Brute force subdue itself and bow? Can darkness drive out darkened dread? Or death extinguish death instead?
We need to interrupt the spiral, find the anti-retroviral. The story is told of Anti-Zeus, a god of peace, made human truce. Into our world, into our midst, a walking, talking armistice. A king now meek, his power made weak, to stand and turn the other cheek. To take the blow, absorb disgrace, then rise to give again his face. In grace undimmed and arms unfurled, to bless and pacify the world. And you, to sweet surrender brought, forgiveness for your battles fought, peace to pass to every soul, then warfare ceased from pole to pole.
Abrupt ends. Let's stand to our feet, shall we? Let's stand.